Section 4, The War's Impact, An American Story. On August 20, 1919, Mary Harris Jones, also known as Mother Jones, was thrown in jail in Homestead, Pennsylvania. The 89-year-old had just finished delivering a fiery, impassioned speech in an attempt to gain support for steel unions. Referring to the owners of the big steel company, she said, "Our Kaisers sit up and smoke 75-cent cigars and have lackeys with knee pants bring them champagne while you starve, while you grow old at 40, stoking their furnaces. You pull in your belts while they banquet. They have stomachs 2 miles long and 2 miles wide, and you fill them. If Gary, chair of U.S. Steel, wants to work 12 hours a day, let him go into the blooming mill and work. What we want is a little leisure, time for music, playgrounds, a decent home, books, and all the things that make life worthwhile." Quoted in Labor in Crisis. An Economy in Turmoil. The end of World War I brought great upheaval to American society. When the war ended, government agencies removed their controls from the American economy. This released pent-up demand in the economy. People raced to buy goods that had been rationed, while businesses rapidly raised prices they had been forced to keep low during the war. The result was rapid inflation. Through most of 1919 and 1920, prices rose at an average of more than 15% per year. Inflation greatly increased the cost of living, the cost of food, clothing, shelter, and other essentials that people need to survive. Inflation leads to strikes. Many companies had been forced to raise wages during the war, but inflation now threatened to wipe out all the gains workers had made. While workers wanted higher wages to keep up with inflation, companies wanted to hold down wages because inflation was also driving up their operating costs. During the war, the number of workers in unions had increased dramatically. By the time the war ended, workers were better organized and much more capable of organizing strikes than they had been before. Many business leaders, on the other hand, were determined to break the power of the unions and roll back the gains labor had made. These circumstances led to an enormous wave of strikes in 1919. By the end of the year, more than 3,600 strikes involving more than 4 million workers had taken place. The Seattle General Strike. The first major strike took place in Seattle when some 35,000 shipyard workers walked off the job demanding higher wages and shorter hours. Soon, other unions in Seattle joined the shipyard workers and organized a general strike. A general strike is a strike that involves all workers living in a certain location, not just workers in a particular industry. The Seattle general strike involved more than 60,000 people and paralyzed the city for 5 days. Although the strikers returned to work without making any gains, their actions worried many Americans because the general strike was a common tactic used in Europe by communists and other radical groups. The Boston Police Strike. Perhaps the most famous strike of 1919 took place in Boston when roughly 75% of the police force walked off the job. Riots and looting soon erupted in the city, forcing the governor of Massachusetts, Calvin Coolidge, to send in the National Guard. When the strikers tried to return to work, the police commissioner refused to accept them. He fired the strikers and hired a new police force instead. Despite protests, Coolidge agreed the men should be fired. He declared, "There is no right to strike against the public safety by anybody, anywhere, anytime." Coolidge's response brought him to national attention and earned him widespread public support. It also convinced the Republicans to make Coolidge their vice presidential candidate in the 1920 election. The Steel Strike. Shortly after the police strike ended, one of the largest strikes in American history began when an estimated 350,000 steelworkers went on strike for higher pay, shorter hours, and recognition of their union. Albert H. Gary, the head of U.S. Steel, refused even to talk to union leaders. Instead, the company set out to break the union by using anti-immigrant feelings to divide the workers. Many steelworkers were immigrants. The company blamed the strike on foreign radicals and called for loyal Americans to return to work. Meanwhile, the company hired African Americans and Mexicans as replacement workers and managed to keep its steel mills operating despite the strike. Clashes between company guards and strikers were frequent, and in Gary, Indiana, a riot left 18 strikers dead. In early January, the strike collapsed. The failure of the strike set back the union cause in the steel industry. Steelworkers remained unorganized until 1937. Reading check. Explaining, what caused the wave of strikes in 1919? Racial unrest. Adding to the nation's economic turmoil was the return of hundreds of thousands of American soldiers from Europe who needed to find employment. Many African Americans who had moved north during the war were also competing for jobs and housing. Frustration and racism combined to produce violence. In the summer of 1919, race riots broke out in over 20 northern cities. The worst violence occurred in Chicago. An African American teenager swimming in Lake Michigan on a hot July day happened to drift toward a beach restricted to whites. Whites on shore allegedly stoned him unconscious, and he drowned. Angry African Americans almost immediately marched into white neighborhoods to retaliate, while white mobs roamed African American neighborhoods, attacking people and destroying property. For almost 2 weeks, Chicago was virtually at war. In the end, 38 people died, 15 white and 23 black, and over 500 were injured. Reading check. Analyzing. Why did the end of the war lead to race riots? The Red Scare. The wave of strikes in 1919 helped to fuel fears that communists were conspiring to start a revolution in the United States. Americans had been stunned when Lenin and the Bolsheviks seized power and withdrew Russia from the war. Americans had become very anti-German as the war progressed, and when the communists withdrew Russia from the war, they seemed to be helping Germany. American anger at Germany quickly expanded into anger at communists as well. Americans began to associate communism with being unpatriotic and disloyal. Americans had long been suspicious of communist ideas. Throughout the late 1800s, many Americans had accused immigrants of importing radical socialist and communist ideas into the United States and blamed them for labor unrest and violence. Now, communists had seized control of an entire nation, and fears surged that they would try to incite revolutions elsewhere. These fears seemed to be confirmed in 1919, when the Soviet Union formed the Communist International, an organization for coordinating the activities of communist parties in other countries. The Red Scare begins. As strikes erupted across the United States in 1919, the fear that communists, or Reds as they were called, might seize power led to a nationwide panic known as the Red Scare. Seattle's mayor, Ole Hansen, spoke for others when he condemned the leaders of the Seattle general strike as revolutionaries who wanted to take possession of our American government and try to duplicate the anarchy of Russia. In April, the Postal Service intercepted more than 30 parcels addressed to leading business people and politicians that were triggered to explode when opened. In June, 8 bombs in 8 cities exploded within minutes of one another, suggesting a nationwide conspiracy. One of them damaged the home of United States Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer in Washington, D.C. Most people believe the bombings were the work of communists or other revolutionaries trying to destroy the American way of life. The Palmer Raids. Declaring that a blaze of revolution was burning up the foundations of society, Palmer took action. He established a special division within the Justice Department, the General Intelligence Division, headed by J. Edgar Hoover. This division eventually became the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI. From late 1919 to the spring of 1920, Palmer organized a series of raids on the headquarters of various radical organizations. Although evidence pointed to no single group as the bombers, Palmer's agents focused on foreign residents and immigrants. The authorities detained thousands of suspects and deported or expelled from the country nearly 600 of them. Palmer's agents often disregarded the civil liberties of the suspects. Officers entered homes and offices without search warrants. People were mistreated and jailed for indefinite periods of time and were not allowed to talk to their attorneys. For a while, Palmer was regarded as a national hero. His raids, however, failed to turn up any hard evidence of revolutionary conspiracy. When his dire prediction that violence would rock the nation on May Day 1920, a popular European celebration of workers, proved wrong, Palmer lost much of his credibility and soon faded from prominence. The Red Scare greatly influenced people's attitudes during the 1920s. Americans often linked radicalism with immigrants, and that attitude led to a call for Congress to limit immigration. Reading check. Examining. After World War I, why were Americans suspicious of some Union leaders? An end to progressivism. Economic problems, labor unrest, and racial tensions, as well as the fresh memories of World War I, all combined to create a general sense of disillusionment in the United States. By 1920, Americans wanted an end to the upheaval. During the 1920 campaign, Ohio Governor James M. Cox and his running mate, Assistant Secretary of the Navy Franklin D. Roosevelt, ran on a platform of keeping alive Woodrow Wilson's progressive ideals. The Republican candidate, Warren G. Harding, called for a return to normalcy. He urged that what the United States needed was a return to the simpler days before the progressive era reforms. Our present need is not heroics, but healing. Not nostrums, but normalcy. Not revolution, but restoration. Not agitation, but adjustment. Not surgery, but serenity. Not the dramatic, but the dispassionate. Not submergence in internationality, but sustainment in triumphant nationality. Quoted in Portrait of a Nation. Harding's sentiment struck a chord with voters, and he won the election by a landslide margin of over 7 million votes. Americans were weary of more crusades to reform society and the world. They hoped to put the country's racial and labor unrest and economic troubles behind them and build a more prosperous and stable society. Reading check. Explaining. How was Harding able to win the presidential election of 1920?